But first of all, I have to say what a wonderful weekend it's been for people, like-minded people like myself, who abhor the loony left. Alan Jones has been re-elected Premier of New South Wales, Kalu Kalei, and President Trump has been found not guilty on all counts. That'll put a smile, a Richter screen on even the stony face of Gerard Henderson. Laura Tingle, welcome back.
Congratulations, Philip. I'm pleased you've had a good weekend.
Oh, it's been just terrific. What are the implications of Alan Jones being re-elected for the federal election?
I think it's interesting, Philip. The federal Libs have been hurrahing Gladys Berejiklian's victory on the weekend. It was a very strange little election, wasn't it? I mean, virtually nothing happened. Only a couple of seats changed hands, and quite a lot of the seats on both sides actually just ended up having larger margins in the direction they previously already had. But be that as it may, I think the interesting thing is that it's really once again raised the question of regional Australia and the Nats and their relevance to more or less anything, and this whole question of their product differentiation and everything, because it was the Nats who really had the most disastrous outcome of anybody.
And of course, the shooters did very well, and they their attitude to the environment is pretty simple: if you see something moving, you shoot it. Whereas they're very pro coal power, so that's another victory for the ultra conservatives.
Well, I pointedly am not an expert on the shooters, fishers and farmers party, Philip, but I have to say that certainly the interesting seat that they won this time was Barwon, which is, if you look at a map of New South Wales, it's this massive electorate which covers large slabs of the state.
Hang on a second, I'm just rolling out this huge map. Ah, yes, there it is, got it.
In some publications it's coloured brown for the Shooters Party, but be that as it may, the guy who ran there has been running a really strong campaign on the issue of water management, because Menindee is right in the middle of Barwon, and of course was the place where there was the big fish kill. The people of Menindee, fish kill or no fish kill, have been really up in arms for a very long time about the quality of their water, and about the fact that they believed cotton farmers were taking too much water out of the system. And I think this is one of the interesting
things. Don't try to cheer me up with the truth.
Oh, dear. That leaves so many things open, Philip. But, yeah, anyway, so it is an interesting thing that water was one of the really big issues that the Shooters Party actually ran on, which is something I've only really been catching up on in the last few days, to be perfectly honest. But nonetheless, that is the case. A lot of people thought that the Shooters might not do so well because of their name post-Christchurch. But that they've done selectively not badly at all. They've picked up three lower house seats, and they'll have seats in the upper house as well. So it's going to be interesting. And their claim now is, look, we're actually, while the Nationals have essentially moved into big business and the interests of the mining companies,
tick.
We've gone into look after the regional communities and sort of declaring themselves to be the party of regional New South Wales. Now, they're going to apparently make a bid federally. I think that might be a bit of a stretch, but they've seemed to have entrenched themselves, I think, in this election campaign.
But the coalition
in regional New South Wales.
The coalition will have the majority, so they won't need to deal with them.
Well, they won't need to deal with them in the House. They won't need to rely on the shooters to form a minority government. But there's now going to be this incredibly colourful collection of odds and sods in the upper house in New South Wales, including the shooters and One Nation's Mark Latham. We always have to keep saying that in, you know, one breath, and various other sort of personages if they want to get any legislation through. So the upper house in New South Wales is going to be a pretty colourful sort of organisation. And in that context, I noticed the head of the Shooters Party has been talking about the fact that they need to the government will have to do something about the Murray-Darling Basin plan if they want to get anywhere with the Shooters Party in the upper house. So water will be a big issue.
I forgot to add the Mark Latham ascendancy to the list of glad tidings for we of the of conservative bent. He's got 8 years now, hasn't he?
He has, and so have the rest of us. Am I allowed to say that? So, yes, he has. And, so it'll be an interesting time.
Now, the Nats, there's still the matter, like a hanging chad, to go back to earlier elections, of Barnaby Joyce.
There's the issue of Barnaby Joyce, and there's the issue of what on earth the coalition federally is going to do about both Barnaby Joyce and the Queensland Nats, and this ongoing issue about energy, coal, whatever. And my good colleague on the Financial Review, Phil Currey, reported today that there's a deal in the making between Scott Morrison and the Nationals head, the Nationals leader, Philip, whose name is?
Hang on, I'll look it up. I'll just get me, turn my phone on and I'll,
Michael
I'll Google
McCormack,
him.
You knew that. But anyway, so they've been making a deal which is supposed to appease the Nats, who want to have some new coal-fired power, but none dare mention the name coal. So we've got an interesting week ahead of us, I think, in the lead-up to the budget. There's a whole heap of things that both sides of politics will be wanting to position themselves on before we go into the budget next week, and almost certainly the announcement of the election at the end of that week. So there's a lot of positioning to be done, including on this question of energy.
Well, let me walk this back. Does ScoMo have cause for comfort in the New South Wales results? Does it really mean that the Turnbull effect has petered out?
I think it suggests that the Turnbull effect certainly hasn't affected the New South Wales result. But I think, to be fair, you'd have to say Gladys Berejiklian was running essentially a united team, if a slightly dull one, and she was she is very middle of the road. You remember that a lot of the sort of conservative members of the coalition are always attacking the New South Wales Liberal Party and saying it's in the thrall of moderates, you know, which is just too horrible to contemplate. But it is true, she's run a government that talks about getting stuff done rather than running a culture war. Now, the reason why people thought that she wouldn't succeed at this election was because there are so many of these infrastructure projects that she started which haven't been finished and are therefore a nightmare to those who have to live with them, most notably the Sydney Light Rail, which has caused all sorts of grief for small businesses along its path. But she runs a very different sort of race to the one in Canberra. And apart from anything else, they're not all at each other's throats so publicly. So, it's probably good that the coalition won in New South Wales rather than that it didn't win, considering most of the people in the coalition in New South Wales thought they were going to get smashed. But I think there are still huge differences between what happened to the Berejiklian government on Saturday and the way Scott Morrison's going into this election campaign federally.
Now, speaking of race, do you think the Libs have learnt much from Christchurch and the discussion last week about the role leaders play?
I don't think so, Philip. We're all sort of been watching with great admiration the way Jacinda Ardern's conducted herself in New Zealand. Scott Morrison, by comparison, really had an opportunity this week to sort of step up. Now, there was an ongoing brawl about what he did in 2011, about this sort of idea that he had raised using anti-Islamic sentiment as a political strategy, which he furiously denies. But whether that's the case or not, the really big opportunity for Scott Morrison last week was to say, we really aren't going to try to... We're going to try to stop our politics from being sort of polluted by far-right extremism. The path to that extremism as it currently stands into our federal politics is particularly via One Nation and Fraser Anning, and thus we will commit to putting them last on our how to vote cards, as even John Howard did eventually. He recognised that this was not in his interests or in the electorate's interests to give these sorts of views this sort of status of Parliament. Now, Scott Morrison just wouldn't do that, and I think the reality is that he can't do that because a lot of his MPs, particularly in Queensland, feel under such threat from One Nation. But I think that his leadership credentials as a national leader have been really badly dented as a result.
We've done a couple of programs on the lack of attention or the insufficient attention placed on ultra-right and, white supremacist groups in the past, and we spoke to New Zealand's Professor Paul Spoonley last week, who's just been on Four Corners, I understand, and he had similar concerns about New Zealand. Do you agree with this? Do you think we've perhaps been too focused on alleged local supporters of ISIS?
Well, without a doubt, that's been where all the public discussion has been. I mean, I don't claim to be an expert on national security spooky things, Philip, but without a doubt, we can see that all the discussion has been about the threats from Islamic extremists. There hasn't really been much attention paid. Experts that we've heard both on Four Corners and elsewhere have essentially made the really basic point that if jihadists had been talking online as the perpetrator of what happened in Christchurch had been doing about what he was planning to do, the authorities would almost certainly have been onto it. They've boasted with some good reason about the fact that they've been able to foil a lot of terrorist plots by Islamic extremists. But quite clearly, they weren't on the case here, either in Australia or New Zealand. And I think that's going to have to they're clearly now scrambling to escalate their monitoring of this.
The rustling leaves of the Aspidistra give it away. That was, of course, Laura Tingle, Chief Political Correspondent for 7:30. And you'll notice, dear listener, that I didn't make any mischievous references to the possibility that Laura might be taking over Insiders. Ellie Nell on RN.